Local police may be finding themselves on the front lines of domestic counterterrorism if a program launched recently by the Los Angeles Police Department is adopted in other large cities. Since 9/11, the government has tried to engage local police in doing counterterrorism work for them, collecting so-called street-level intelligence about suspicious activities that might predict another attack. So far, it hasn't worked out that way. But an LAPD official has devised a possible solution that the LA Times calls, quote, so cheap, so easy to implement, and so innovative that officials in D.C. are thinking of making it a national model for all police departments. Joining me today is Jim Lafferty, Executive Director of the Los Angeles National Lawyers Guild, to talk about the implications of having local police become intelligence officers. Jim Lafferty, welcome once again to Law & Disorder.
Good to be with you.
Now, Jim, tell us your thoughts about what they're calling an innovative plan. Is this going to make us safer? What new intelligence gathering breakthrough is this really?
Well, as I think you indicated in your introduction, they've been trying to get local police officers on the beat ever since 9/11 to all become little counterintelligence spies and counterintelligence gathering agents. It's always been very impractical and hard to do from a financial point of view, too complicated, I guess, a lot of local authorities thought. So here, somebody in L.A. has come up with a way to make it simple. Simple, of course, is always dangerous. They've reduced it to a kind of a checklist, if you will. And it's basically a 64-item checklist. I think you and your listeners will be rather surprised at some of the items on it. These are items, in other words, that should alert local law enforcement officers that there may be a terrorist attack or a terrorist agent in their midst. One of them says, does the individual appear to engage in counter-surveillance efforts? And, of course, they define that by doubling back in their car or changing directions and so forth.
Evasive driving.
Evasive driving.
That could describe any driver in L.A. or New York.
Yeah, well, certainly in L.A., I know that's for sure. And it gets worse, of course. I mean, you know, they go on to talk about how if you take pictures of public buildings, they don't appear to have aesthetic value. Well, tourists are always taking pictures, of course, of public buildings. Whether they have aesthetic value or not often depends upon whether it's a professional photographer or just a tourist like you and I taking pictures. Who's to say, after all, what constitutes something with aesthetic value?
Right, and I know that even in New York, before these 64 items were issued, I've heard stories of tourists and New Yorkers who like to take pictures being stopped and asked why they're photographing a building. I mean, we're in a city with some of the most beautiful buildings in the world.
We're defending a case like that right now. There's actually here an amateur photographer who's very good. He's at art shows and likes to take images at sunrise, interesting industrial buildings, and that's exactly what he was doing. And he got arrested for doing it because one of the images that he was catching as he took this picture was an oil refinery, you know. Legal observers, as you well know, of the National Lawyers Guild, our legal observers often take photos and videos at large demonstrations. Are we going to be suspected of engaging in counterterrorism or a terrorism activity if we do that? It's silly.
It is silly. And I guess a concern that I have is that by reducing to a list of 64 items, the government seems to feel safe that they can be now converting local police who are trained in a certain way to act as intelligent gatherers. And we know that there's a special expertise, long years of training, that goes into real intelligence. And I think for me, one of the problems that we've seen over the last few years is the government over-collecting information, be it emails, recording individuals who are at protests, trying to gather political information, storing them, and then not really being able to sift through and analyze because we don't have enough personnel and the means to actually do that. This is going to add yet another layer of 64 items that I can see just becoming a nightmare if the local police does indeed try to start enforcing this.
Well, you hit on a very good point. In fact, as we know from the investigations after 9/11, all sorts of information was available. The point is, as the phrase was, that nobody was connecting those collected dots. The idea that we're now going to have thousands of more dots at a local police department, which is already as busy as it can be. We're here in L.A. trying to protect everyday crimes that are going on in the streets of our city. The notion that somehow with a modicum of training, and I can assure you that's all this the order of the chief calls for, are going to somehow be able to collect meaningful data and then, as you point out, analyze it. And the local police department is charged with that responsibility. I mean, I've talked to local police officers, and they know this is ridiculous. They know this is something that isn't going to be done. What is going to happen is that an awful lot of us are going to find ourselves on more lists. One of the items, for example, on this 64-item checklist, does an individual seem to have an interest in the travel itinerary of public officials, you know?
Right.
Well, all of the protest groups here in L.A. always want to know when George Bush is coming to town, when Dick Cheney is coming to town, when the candidates are coming to town. We engage in all sorts of perfectly legal efforts through their campaign offices or what have you to find out their itinerary, to find out their travel schedule, so that we can greet them along the way with our protest signs. That would clearly get you on the list now of the LAPD.
That information is basically public, and any good protester knows that you have to be one step ahead of the game to be there, plan a protest before the individual gets to town. But I got to tell you, one that really got to me was number 7, abandons vehicle in a secured or restricted location like the airport or a sports venue. I mean, how many times in picking someone up at the airport have you had to double park your car, run in to find the person? But a sports game, you're picking up your nephew from a softball game. And
No, of course, you're absolutely right. All of these are open to interpretation. Obviously, there are some on the list. Somebody buying large quantities of explosives, you know.
Right.
All right, somebody's buying large quantities of explosives. I suppose we should certainly know about that. But most of the items are subject to this kind of very subjective way of looking at it by people who, as we've already pointed out, local officers aren't going to be that well trained to begin with. And the other part of this that I find really offensive is that an anonymous individual, these items don't have to have been observed by a police officer here in L.A., an anonymous individual can see something which to her or him looks suspicious, and they have no training at all, of course, report it to the police. The police must dutifully take it down. If the person reporting it wishes to be anonymous under this law, under this rule now here in L.A., they can remain anonymous. And nevertheless, your report on your activity is then given to a whole bunch of policing agencies, including the criminal task force. Your name is then on a list of a possible criminal, et cetera, et cetera. It's really draconian.
That's what the definition of suspicious activity report, which is the report they're going to be using to document any reported or observed activity, it does say that it may be reported either by observations or investigation of police, or, as you've said, by private parties. Now, that's kind of like the campaign that we've had here in New York on the subways. If you see something, say something. It's essentially turning private parties into uninformed informants.
Yeah.
It may just be because they see something that doesn't fit into their notion of how things are done or seems different to them. That's very dangerous.
Well, we know for a fact, you and I and other groups like us around the country, that people who harbor a prejudice against, for example, Muslims, people wearing headscarves, people wearing religious clothing, who may be engaging in an activity that is perfectly innocent, but to the prejudiced viewer, aha, that must be another one of those people planning a terrorist attack, you know. Next thing you know, they're on a list. In fact, one of the first individuals here to call this to our attention is the man that is the head of the Shura Council. The Shura Council is the coalition, if you will, of all of the Islamic mosques in Southern California. They're very concerned about this because this lends itself so clearly to racial profiling. And but I was thinking as I'm looking over the list here as we talk, I've been in the Guild office, and I haven't been in the national office in the last few months, I guess. But last time I was there, you have some posters up on the wall that might get you into this list.
You bet I do. Posters of heroes of not only many in the Guild. We won't name names, but if we had a visit by a local law enforcement official and they were trying to look for people to put on the list, we'd be added to that list.
Yeah, because one of the items is, does somebody espouse or give support to terrorists.
Well, it even says posters of terrorist leaders displays overt support of known terrorist networks.
Yeah, so you got a poster up somewhere of Che Guevara, and if the man involved or the individual involved thinks he's a terrorist or was a terrorist, I should say, you're on the list.
Many of our members would be on the list.
Yeah.
I just wanted to mention, because earlier you said that, of course, possession of illicit materials, biologic agents like anthrax and other things are clearly on the list. But what was a bit troublesome to me is that number 11 says makes or attempts to make suspicious purchase, such as a large amount of otherwise legal materials like pool chemicals or fertilizers.
Yes.
I mean, Jim, there goes the pool. There goes the lawn.
Yeah,
that's me a little bit much.
Well, of course, of course. Somebody goes and buys it. Because what is a large amount? You've been to my house. I happen to have a very large back area behind my house. Should I choose to fertilize it, I would be buying an amount of fertilizer greater than most of my neighbors. Is that going to get me on the list? I mean, you know, the question you asked at the beginning, I think, of our talk this morning is any of this going to make us safer? I don't know. I find it hard to understand how sparsely trained, already overworked local police officials working in cooperation with anonymous sources on a list as subjective as this, and having the duty now of maintaining yet more files on people, is going to make us safer. I think it's more than a slippery slope. I think it's a waste of our tax dollars. It is a slippery slope in terms of eroding our rights to privacy, to go about our political life without having every action that we engage in that may be contrary to the interest of the Bush administration being viewed as somehow subversive or possibly indicative of a terrorist strain in our bloodstream or something. Like the Patriot Act and like almost every executive order that's come out post 9/11 and the acts that have been passed by Congress, they're designed, I think, in the main to protect the ruling elite in this country from those of us who would protest their war policies or their domestic policies. I don't think they're designed to make us safer from terrorist attacks. And I can't see how this could be. And the one or two, and I haven't done a study of it, but the one or two rather high-ranking police officers that I've had a chance to chat with already about this here in L.A. are very skeptical about it as well. And yet, it looks like it's going to be the wave of the future. They're talking about making this national now, Heidi.
Well, in fact, Police Chief William Bratton, formerly of our own NYPD here,
indeed,
is extremely enthusiastic about this program. I read that he just loves using statistics and standardized reporting to analyze and combat crime trends. And after the LAPD consulted with officials in Washington, Bratton issued a special order this last March, formally requiring all officers to report incidents, quote, potentially related to foreign or domestic terrorism, using this program designed by police official named McNamara.
Mm-hmm.
Now, also, I believe Bratton has gotten the attention of the U.S. Directorate of National Intelligence with this program. In April, it sent teams of experts to Boston and Chicago to see if the LAPD program can be implemented in those cities and get this as a model to much greater expansion.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. No, I think this is the wave of the future, I'm afraid. I'm very pleased that your program is calling some attention to it. It's very new. Some of our lawyers here are just beginning to look at it to see to what extent it's constitutionally overbroad and therefore unconstitutional, to what extent people would have recourse if they find themselves on a list, to what extent this can be challenged. But like so many of these things, the way that I think is most effective to challenge them, frankly, is to talk about them, to protest them in the streets, to not let them make us afraid to speak up, to ridicule them when they deserve to be ridiculed, and to challenge them when they deserve to be challenged, and not let this kind of repressive cloak of fear settle over the country, which, as I say, I think is designed in the main not to protect us, but to protect the government from those of us who would find fault with its policies.
Jim, did you know that the FBI has been given permission in L.A. to legally engage in non-criminal surveillance based on ethnic profiling?
Yeah, I did. And that's very controversial here as well. And I'm glad you mentioned that because I think, you know, when we go back and look at the COINTEL programs of the FBI in the late 60s and early 70s, those programs started off initially as data gathering, evidence gathering, intelligence gathering programs, and quickly became programs in which agents of the FBI would infiltrate perfectly legal political groups, try to disrupt their activities, try to seed dissension within the groups, and often try to seduce the groups into engaging in illegal activity when that hadn't been their intention at all. And this new 64-item checklist, this new order from the LA Chief of Police, coupled with what you've just said about the FBI, wrap it all together, and basically what you've got again is COINTELPRO. You've got spying on legal activity.
One of the things that you mentioned about the so-called chilling effect that this type of new policy will have is that when individuals hear about it, they may curb their activities out of fear. And we've seen that with the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, which is so confusing and vague in its language that animal rights and environmental rights activists really aren't sure what activity is legal and what isn't. And I think that this and other laws that are being brought forth and that really play on the public sphere by using the word terrorist, one of the greatest side effects is that they are chilling free speech.
Yeah, let's say, for example, to use what we just talked about this morning, I go and I buy those rather large amounts of fertilizer, and I don't buy it for my regular gardening place, and maybe I'm a Muslim to boot, and they think, my God, what's that guy want with all that fertilizer? And so they report me. I find myself on this list. The police are charged under Bratton's order with investigating some of these things. Somebody knocks on my door, police officer knocks on my door, say, we understand you just bought, you know, five huge 20 bags of fertilizer. What's that all about? And I explain it. He says, well, okay, fine. But now I'm thinking to myself, my God, there's a demonstration next week. I guess they got their eye on me. I mean, I better not go. I mean, should I go? Why? You know, that's the chilling. If that's what chilling effect means, it's not some kind of vague concept. People really do react to that. We can't expect everybody in this country to be willing to be a hero, to be willing to stand up to the FBI individually if they think that every move they're going to make is now going to keep them on a list, make them more suspicious, especially if they're of an ethnic group or religious group that is already under the watchful eye of our government anyway.
Well, that brings us to our closing question, Jim. What should people do?
You know, we are going to look at whether this can be challenged in the courts. I don't know the answer to that yet. Whether this can be challenged, you know, by way of some of the political movements around town that protest these things regularly. Certainly there will be protest about it. But I always say that the most effective thing that any individual or group of individuals could do these days in this country, as their lawyers are suing in court, is to exercise the rights they're trying to squelch, to not be afraid to go to the demonstration, to not be afraid to buy the fertilizer if you need the fertilizer, to not be afraid to find out when the president's going to be in town and what his travel route may be so that you can line the streets with protest, to exercise the rights so that you don't lose them, and in doing so to let the government know that they cannot intimidate you out of doing that simply by passing this make work for police officers, which won't make us safer anyway.
Jim, we couldn't have said it better here, and we really thank you for your insights about this new policy that originated out of your hometown.
Yeah. Thank you, Heidi. Thank you. It's wonderful. Always good to be on the wonderful show.
And we'll talk to you later.
Thank you, dear.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.